Okay, it's Thursday at 1 o'clock and you're tuned in to the Farm Report. Today's Farm Report is sponsored by Acme Smoked Fish, located in Greenpoint, Brooklyn. Acme has been a mainstay in New York's culinary landscape for over 55 years. Using old world recipes, Acme produces the finest smoked salmon, whitefish, sable that discerning palates demand. For information on where to find Acme, Blue Hill Bay, or Ruby Bay products, visit www.acmesmokefish.com.
All right, and today we have with us special friends in network. He's been on the Farm Report. This, I think, is his third appearance here. Matt Lorenz of Trees Not Trash. Last time he was on the show was actually a year and 5 days ago, where we spoke to him about ultra-sophisticated green buildings in the Netherlands. Before that, we've spoken with him to talk about how to create an urban garden on your roof, green walling, things of the like. You know, converting gray water into white water and just all related projects. So Matt Lorenz, we are happy to have you back here in studio with us live today to talk about some of your newest projects and everything in the world of Trees Not Trash.
Howdy, howdy. Good to be here. How
Definitely.
Are you going?
We're super excited to have you, Matt. I want to hear more about putting the bush back in Bushwick. What is going on?
Putting the bush back in Bushwick. That's right. That's Trees Not Trash. That's an organization that I've been involved with for, I guess, the last maybe 4 years or so. When I first moved to Bushwick, I started getting involved. It's just kind of a not-for-profit collective of urban gardeners, and we manage a couple of community gardens here in Bushwick. As you may or may not be aware, Bushwick is supposedly one of the most non-green of the areas in the five boroughs, meaning that there's fewer parks or trees per citizen, which is a bit troubling considering that a lot of us really either come from places that are pretty green or we really like there to be green stuff around. And since Bushwick is kind of in the process of being converted from a formerly a lot more commercial area to hopefully more residential area, we're trying to slowly bring the number of street trees number up higher, the number of community spaces that can be used for gardening, if only for just green stuff that looks cool, but ideally for stuff that actually can be grown to be eaten locally. So there's a number of volunteers that work in the area. We're really happy about a project we just started last year with the Bushwick branch of the Brooklyn Public Library. And that's really awesome because they allowed us essentially to set up shop in their backyard. So there's this beautiful Carnegie-era library, which is right here, only about less than a mile away. It's right on Bushwick and, I believe, McKibben. And yeah, so we started a Young Gardeners project, which started in the spring. Regrettably, they lost their funding for weekend programming, so we had to shut down operations on Saturday. But then the good news is that they're now open again on Saturdays. So we're starting to put in planter boxes, and we got a bunch of trees donated and a lot of foliage from some of our local really gracious sponsors, such as the Sprout Home in Williamsburg. They give us kind of overstock stuff, and we're able to put it in our community gardens. So we got a lot of projects going, a lot of cool people in the mix, and anybody's interested in helping out, just check out the website, shoot me an email, give us a call, and you can find out when we're active.
And where would that be? Treesnottrash.org?
That's correct.
All right, cool. So go there for all contact info and things of the like.
And so you guys currently are operating just in Bushwick?
That's correct. We've had some kind of overlaps where, for example, there's a community garden on, I believe it's Lafayette in Bed-Stuy, where we've gotten seedlings and things from them. We get free mulch every year from up in Greenpoint. If anybody's interested in getting a bunch of free mulch right after Christmas tree chopping time, they grind up all the trees and they have these huge big mountains of bark, and you can fill up as many truckloads as you want. If you don't have a truck, you can rent one and just drive it to your community garden, and you can basically put that on top of stuff that allows a little bit of insulation. It can be used as kind of beauty bark for a patio, something like that, but they just, you know, they have to get rid of it. And regrettably, there appears to be a lot more beauty bark floating around as a result of this recent tornado we had, because a lot of trees got chopped down.
Yeah, I really wanted to ask about that. I mean, what does that mean for your projects and other people? I mean, I know I just got an email from a friend of the network, Derek Denglow, saying his community farm, 80 to 90% of their harvest has been completely wiped out because of last week's hailstorm in October.
Yep.
What are we do?
Other than try to enact legislation that'll be perhaps a little bit more conscious of the ongoing global warming, which I refer to in not so unfunny terms as a global weirdening,
right.
I think it is perhaps that the entire, you know, the global weather conditions are certainly getting warmer, but what that results in on the local level is that traditional weather patterns that you kind of come to expect, like, oh, this time of year, it should be this temperature or whatever. In fact, it's resulting in more extreme weather patterns. I think a lot of evidence suggests that areas that were formerly perhaps wetter during a certain season are drying out, and the inverse can be said. I know the summer, for example, it seemed like Seattle and San Diego kind of swapped weather for the whole summer. It was really cold and foggy in Southern California for most of the summer, and it was really dry and warm up in, or drier and warmer than normal up in the Pacific Northwest. So what can be done about it? I'm not sure. Definitely, it makes me kind of reevaluate a lot of my structures that I'm putting up. Our roof garden on our building was literally just ripped asunder, and there's things that are just gone that were like blown into Queens. Wow. So I don't know what you can do other than try to make things really more bulletproof. Mm-hmm. If you have foliage that is trellised to a wall, make sure that the planter beds that are also providing the roots for those also are bolted to the wall, because we lost a whole strand of Virginia creeper because the whole box ripped away and it was still stuck on the wall. So we survived a lot of the plant damage, but we had a lot of structural damage as it related to that. So it is really tricky to make it bulletproof for a tornado. I mean, what do you do? But there probably are techniques that people will learn the first time and hopefully make things a little bit stronger for the future.
Definitely. And I know Aaron and I were talking a little bit before the show. We wanted to maybe get into a little more about this climate changes. But I just wanted to ask, do you have any, as we are a source here for resources, any place that people can go to kind of follow these, like, you know, changing trends in what you, you know, call your global weirdness? I mean, where do you go to, like, you know, stay on top of, you know, some of these issues?
That's a good question. I kind of troll around the web and just look for stuff. I guess I'm not versed in too much of the data related to it. Mm-hmm. I think I kind of intuitively feel that it's a factor. And as a result of that, I guess it just makes those of us that are willing or able a little bit more kind of acutely aware of just the fact that, listen, like, we have to be able to get food locally grown with increasing readiness. We have to be able to have, you know, kind of a robustness to our kind of locavore economy, so that things like, you know, I love the idea of the Grange farms. I love the idea that instead of producing more ecological kind of byproducts and waste by trucking stuff in from far away, we should rely ideally on stuff that's grown more locally, ideally stuff that you grow in your own backyard or on your roof. And that, I think the technologies are becoming more readily available. Mm-hmm. And certainly the resources and the DIY kind of, like, hey, do you want to learn how to make a planter bed, or do you want to learn how to make a rainwater collection system? That experience is being easier and easier to share. And I think the resources for getting these raw materials it's getting more prolific, which is really great news. But again, you know, we're always kind of playing catch up with what might be expected to be a better threshold of awareness and readiness. It's always, you definitely have your work cut out for you if you're trying to make this place a little bit greener around here, for sure.
I definitely want to give a shout out for some new kind of resources in growing food in urban environments. Parsons is actually hosting a wonderful exhibit right now called Carrot City Urban Concrete. You can walk in. It's 13th and 5th Avenue. They have it's a partnership between Parsons and Lang, the undergraduate program at the New School, and a group out of Toronto called Carrot City. They have a traveling exhibit of new technology in urban farming. So they have a lot of really interesting models, feeder bags for growing plants in. It really runs the gamut. And they're also doing programming on Wednesday nights. So it's definitely something to check out if you want to get into a little bit more growing in the city. Climate change. Yeah, I was surprised to learn that the heat index for New York City, for cities in general, are hotter. They tend to retain a lot of heat. And I know that trees have become, I don't know if it was like this when you guys were in school, but the, like, plant a tree, the Arbor Day Foundation.
Oh, yeah, totally. You know, it's forever. What was it? Earth Day. We will always plant a tree at our elementary schools.
And then I know New York City is launching the Million Trees program, and then you have your tree program here in Bushwick. Are you guys connected in any way? Or what do you think it is about trees that resonates so much with people as kind of a tool for change?
Well, the tree is something that can be put in virtually any area, including on public streets, if you get the right paperwork, or if you get made the right 311 call. But you can have them inside, outside. You can put them in something that's movable, and immediately it gives you this living thing that you can take care of. And by perhaps taking care of that, maybe if it's the first tree you've taken care of, it might lead you to look at other trees and their health around you with a little bit more kind of care. You know, if you're growing your own thing and you recognize recognize, okay, it needs to have certain health for the root system. You know, you need to trim it here and prune it there. And you can move it to a little bit better sun or less sun and so forth. It kind of makes it so that if you start on that level, then perhaps as you're walking down the street, you see like, hey, there's, you know, like for example, here in Bushwick, just this earlier this year, there were several hundred trees. I think there's supposed to be a couple of thousand in the area, but they at least have several hundred just within maybe five or six blocks of here. And so what's cool about that is you're walking by and you see that like, wow, you know, because we had a really dry, relatively dry summer. Mm-hmm. There was a couple of weeks where we had virtually no rainfall, which was really bizarre. And as someone who harvests rainwater, I had built this kind of elaborate system and then, okay, great. And then, you know, it was just bone dry. And so like, for example, a lot of the street trees that got put in, it's really critical that for the first couple of months, certainly a couple of years of their life, that they have, I think it's 20 gallons per week of water, which, and you can imagine that if it's not coming from Mother Nature,
you gotta get those watering cans out.
But to the credit of a lot of Bushwick citizens, I would see them out there with a hose, kind of making, you know, they'd make the little donuts around the base to retain a little bit of water. You got the gator bags that are around there. They're hosing them down, maybe cracking a fire hydrant and using a bucket to get those. Because those little guys, you know, they start out small, but every year they're just, I mean, trees are like slow motion explosions. You wait a couple of decades and they're these big, beautiful things that shade us, keep us, you know, keep the streets looking a little bit better. They actually, supposedly they ease a certain acute anxiety of certain types of kids that just are kind of allergic to straight angles and things of building awnings. It breaks up that silhouette. They also have the property of the leaves oftentimes secrete an oily substance that grabs dust from the air and results in a lessened incidence of allergies and less incidence of respiratory illness such as asthma and so forth. So there's a lot of reasons why trees are a good idea. And we're just really happy to be involved partially with a Million Trees Initiative, partially with Parks and Rec, partially with local organizations to really try to bring the put the bush back in Bushwick for sure.
Cool. Well, we'll take a short break. Let's hear a little bit more about how you've, you know, actually gotten, you know, to the point where you're able to be involved in all these projects, because they all sound awesome and super wonderful. And let's keep the conversation going. We come back with the Heritage Radio Network's Farm Report back in just a moment with Matt Lorenz of Trees Not Trash.
It's not that easy being green, having to spend each day the color of the leaves, when I think it could be nicer being red or yellow or gold or something much more colorful like that. It's not that easy being green. It seems you blend in with so many other ordinary things, and people tend to pass you over 'cause you're not standing out like flashy sparkles in the water or stars in the sky. But green's the color of spring, and green can be cool and friendly like, and green could be big like an ocean, or important like a mountain.
I don't know if you guys are feeling a little sad about the end of Kermit the Frog singing like I am, but what a great transition. Nice. We want to talk a little bit more about rain and trees, obviously, with our guest, Matt. Matt, I know that the trees are definitely well known for their water retention properties, for preventing erosion. If we're thinking more about an urban environment, I mean, what roles can trees play in those traditionally, I think, what are more thought of as suburban or like rural attributes of trees?
Mm-hmm. Well, if you'll notice, a lot of the local street trees that were put in just earlier this year, they have a considerably larger kind of aperture in the sidewalk. Generally, you might see a 5-foot by 5-foot hole than most of the street trees were planted with back in pretty much from time immemorial. The new ones are almost double that size. And at first, they looked like they might be a little bit too wide, or perhaps, you know, like it seemed like it was not necessary for a brand new tree that only has maybe a 2 or 3 inch caliper. But in fact, that doubling of the size results in more of the water that's landing on the ground or kind of running past goes into the street tree, which provides the roots with pretty much double the amount of water that they might get normally. And this is really important specifically in the area we live in, because we're so close to the Newtown Creek, which is, for those that are unaware of what a Superfund site is, it might be too tricky to go into it, but it's been recently designated a Superfund site, mm-hmm. which results in it's been determined that its pollution levels are so high, and that for so many years it had been used as essentially a big trash can, that now they essentially tap funds from a number of different companies that have been involved in the pollution and create kind of a super fund with which to remedy these really deep-seated problems. So what happens is the reason that street trees are so important for preventing runoff by retaining some of this water that goes past is that what happens is in a really extreme downpour, at some point, the sewer system that exists in New York City, which certainly I'm sure back in, you know, the 1700s or 1800s when it was first designed, was probably adequate to deal with all of the runoff, all of the sewer and everything. But of course, it didn't scale very well past a certain size and a number of citizens. So now what happens is there's what's called a CSO, or a combined sewage overflow.
I feel like I experienced some of that in my neighborhood last week.
Oh yeah, I think it was brought very quickly to the forefront in the last month or two.
Yeah, it definitely was.
And the CSO essentially is that in a really extreme downpour, the DEP, or the Department of Environmental Protection, they reach a certain critical mass of flow of water going through the sewage. Because what happens is imagine a raindrop lands on the street, it finds its way downhill to the nearest drain, mm-hmm. and then it slowly kind of finds its way to a junction where it goes into the river. If it's just the amount of rain that's picking up all sorts of particulate matter and oil and dust and things like that and landing in the river, that's one cause of pollution that goes into the river. But what happens is the system gets overburdened in the case of a really extreme downpour, and they actually start to put raw sewage with the sewer, with the storm drain water into the rivers, which there's a particularly troubling YouTube clip that I had brought to my attention that was happening on, I believe it was the 16th of last month, which those of us in local will go down in local lore as the tornado of Brooklyn. And it was directly after that insane downpour, where there's a video clip of the Gowanus Canal, which is, I think, the second most polluted waterway, second only to our own Newtown Creek. But you literally see a brown wall of stuff just being vented out of the very top part of the creek. And it's literally raw sewage being added to the river. So those of us that enjoy our swims in Coney Island and in Long Beach during the summer, it's wise to kind of check how recently it's rained, because these are all nasty things that are going directly into the water system. So street trees, to make a long story short, are one way to mitigate that amount of rainfall that's making its way to the waterways, that's flooding the system. So the less water that actually during a rain goes directly into the sewage system, even if you can alleviate it and have it so it slows it down, which is a lot of times what planter boxes on a garden roof will do.
Definitely.
You're not adding, even if you're retaining only several dozen gallons of water per big rainfall, that's a little bit less that's actually going in, making a combined sewage overflow and resulting in a lot of nasty stuff getting into the rivers.
So that has definitely been something with trees, and I think with urban farming, talking about easing the impact on the city's aging sewer system. You had mentioned rainwater collection. Mm-hmm. What are you collecting that for? Like rooftop showers or?
A rooftop shower would be a cool idea.
I like that.
What we have is, I just was in San Diego, and a friend has rigged up a system where he's using water that comes right out of the street, but he's actually, after he showers outside, and he has this little garden area, and then the water goes through a little hose system.
Sounds like it'd be really beautiful.
He waters his garden with his shower. You use Dr. Bronner's and it's no big deal. But the reason you'd want to harvest rainwater is that, the idea of, if you have a lot of native locally trees and shrubs and so forth that are local, they're going to pretty much need about as much rainfall as has been over the past, however many decades or hundreds or thousands of years of their evolution. If you have a lot of non-native stuff, that's what's called hydrovore stuff that wants a lot more water than average, you're going to need to water that. How you do that is the easiest way, the most expensive way, and the least kind of forward thinking way is just to pull out a hose and just water it. If you have to do that, that's one way to do it. And certainly the water bill that you're generating is not that big of a deal. Yeah. But for those that are able, you actually can locate the downspout, which is the part of your drain system that's kind of going either usually from a pitched parapet wall roof down to basically it's a long spout that's going to the sewer.
Right.
Exactly. What you can do is you can either redirect that water into a series of basins or basin, And it's a fairly simple process. We've got it, I guess it's now the third year of our rainwater harvesting system that we have at my building in Bushwick, mm-hmm. that is about 100 gallons total. It's basically three buckets. There's a 55-gallon bucket, a 35-gallon bucket, and then another small, like a half-cut bucket. Mm-hmm. So when one fills up, it starts to fill up the other and so forth. In addition to kind of creating a cool sound sculpture, instead of the water just going in, you know, to, you know, during the rain, you hear this kind of waterfall, you actually are able to retain that water. And then the good news is that, for example, there's no hose connection on my back deck, but I have about, I guess it's maybe a 500 or 600 square foot, tons of plants, trees, shrubs, including edible stuff.
Wow.
And it's all watered just locally. Having said that, like I said, really dry summer. And for 2 weeks, there was virtually no rainfall. I think it was in July. So I did have to run 5 gallon buckets from the shower, and it broke my heart because I was walking them past this wonderful system I had built that was going unutilized.
Depressing.
Yeah, exactly. But it's actually a fairly easy system to do. You do want to keep a couple of things in mind. It will be a reservoir where water is sitting for some period of time, so there will be a mosquito issue. But that's a simple remedy. You just literally put a screen over the top, which also filters rocks and particulate matter from going in the first place. You also want to make sure that the structural load of the roof that you're putting it on, if it's on concrete on the ground, it's no big deal. But if it's actually on a roof, you're going to want to probably orient it more towards the side of the parapet wall, where it's probably closer to, so it's putting less strain on the roof. You're also going to want to make sure that, for example, if it's next to the edge of a parapet wall and you have a tornado, that your 55-gallon bucket doesn't get blown 20 feet down into your garden like ours happened in the 16th of last month. So there's a couple of things, but if you just use reasonably safe techniques, you can harvest water and then you can use that to water your stuff.
Wow. That's a lot, but I think it's definitely something that we could like draw out and make a little PDF of, and mm-hmm. we should shoot out to all these people who kind of have these projects, you mm-hmm. know, going on, so that they can use this very simple model and put up on your site. Let's mm-hmm. let's work on that.
Yeah,
maybe
that'd
one
be great.
Afternoon.
Yeah, that'd everybody fun. Likes a good graphic.
Yeah, for sure.
Okay, so we're talking about beautifying the city, saving rainwater, the role of trees. What about migratory bird patterns or insects or additional homes for squirrels? I mean, is there any kind of thoughts on the benefits of trees for, I don't know, non-rat city animals?
Yeah, it's been really amazing. Just over the last couple of years, there's kind of, you know, the more foliage and green leafy matter you have in the backyard or the back deck, the more of a likelihood you have of perhaps a passing flock of birds to stop by. There's a lot of increased bee activity. And it's always, for me, a delight to see a normal honeybee buzzing around the multiple things that are blooming, because we know that there's an incidence, I think it's called CCD or colony collapse disorder, which is resulting in worldwide populations of bees going down. Yeah, so if you can add a couple more little I think it turns out that initially it was suspected that it was cell phone towers that were thwarting their ability to use the electromagnetic mm-hmm. radiation of the earth to navigate. I think that's been
I think it's
debunked.
Been proven. This is like a fungus.
It's a mite.
Of
yeah,
yeah
exactly.
It's like a dual
right,
impact.
Right. So whether or not you can actually do anything about that, you can, in fact, if you have more stuff that's blooming, you can provide, that's just a little bit more food that these guys can have, and they
safe
can
safe haven.
Yeah. Though the one thing that's a bummer, there's a certain type of bee, on a bee related note, there's a leafcutter bee that are not colony bees. They're grayish, kind of bluish color, and they actually chop little heart shapes out of your leaves, and they'll rip, and they love certain types of trees. And I was wondering what the heck was going on in the garden. There was all these little holes in some of my favorite
Someone
trees.
Someone had a crush on you.
Exactly. It's like the bees were telling me, we love your non-native sugar maples, and we're going to turn every leaf into a stalk. So I ended up figuring out which ones they were, and I would catch them, and I didn't have the heart to kill a right. bee. I mean, whether or not it's a colony bee, still it's a bee. So I would catch and release. I would walk them down a couple of blocks from my house. Whether or not they found their way back, I'm not sure.
They probably did.
They probably were like, yeah, I mean, we're talking about bees, right?
Yeah.
These guys, you can release them in like Montana and they'll probably find their way back.
Exactly.
Yeah.
Wow. Sugar maples though. That's sad. I'm sorry. Those mm-hmm. are beautiful.
Oh, they're still alive. They've got some heart shapes in them, but they're
all
still
right,
alive.
That's cool then. Little tag from the from your blue gray bee, mm-hmm. which I have not seen actually. We see a lot of bees back here in the backyard of Roberta's with, mm-hmm. everything they've got growing in the above us and behind us. So I haven't seen a gray or bluish looking one
I
yet.
I think the bees also really like Roberta's margarita pizza, because they usually come out when we're snacking on that after the show. What about good tree spots in New York City if I want to learn a little bit more about different varieties? I know there's the Botanical Gardens in Brooklyn and some other spots. Is there a place mm-hmm. that you like to go to you know, soak up some tree love?
There's a, I guess on a similarly regrettable note, that Maria Hernandez Park, which is our local large park, suffered a huge downage of trees in the tornado. I mean, I still like to go there, but the southwestern corner of that, which is essentially the corner that met the storm head on, all the old London planes, which are the really classic New York tree, both park and street tree, these big, beautiful trees, almost half the ones that I could see that we used to have a huge canopy are all just chopped. But as far as, yeah, you mentioned the Botanic Gardens, great place to go check out a lot of stuff that's native and non-native. I really love to check out the Ridgewood Reservoir, which is essentially to the southern extremity of our part of the borough. If you go down any of the south north, if you go down, for example, central all the way till it ends, basically due south of between us and JFK, there's this ridge and the Ridgewood Reservoir. It's a formerly, I imagine, some sort of irrigation depot for water. But it's a really amazing kind of confluence of a lot of old growth trees or older growth trees that's been essentially left untouched. And you can take a walk around the reservoir itself, which is no longer active, but still has usually a bit of water in there. And you can see this just, it's hard to imagine that you're in New York City because you're just in the, you're surrounded, it's essentially like you're in the woods. And it's real, I would recommend anybody
wow,
to,
yeah,
looking
that
for,
great.
Yeah, you can walk a dog there. You can, there's a bike path that
yeah,
goes all the way
awesome.
Around.
It's awesome. I have
really
visuals
cool.
of Westchester in my head when you're mentioning
it's
this.
It has a Westchester-esque sort of aspect
oh, nice.
To it, for sure.
Wow. Well, you learn a little something new every day. Mm-hmm. Well, I guess we're going to have to wrap it up for today. It's always awesome to have, you know, someone come back and tell us what they're up to. So Matt, I'm sure we'll have you on again real soon, if not a year from 5 days from now.
That's right. Like clockwork, every year in
Put
5 days.
On the
totally. Definitely.
Awesome.
So thanks for joining us. We got a lot of exciting interviews and things coming up in the next month. So we will be back here every Thursday live coming at you from the Heritage Radio Network studio in the back of Roberta's. We're going to say thanks to Jack and Dan for engineering and producing our show today. And tune in next week live at 1 o'clock, the Heritage Radio Network's Farm Report. Check the archives for more on this interview later today.